Presentation is entitled Modeling Framework to Determine Optimum Training Loads for Economic and Environmental Constraints. I'm going to talk a little bit about how, why I thought of this, why I chose to do this research, some of the background. I'm going to talk a little bit about the framework itself, not in great detail, and then highlight a few of the results that are possible, but only a few, because there's a lot of data that can be extracted out of this that I don't have time to cover. Introduction, basically we're talking about off-road military training, everything from tracked vehicles driving over a training range to trucks to just soldiers on foot walking across a grassland, for example. Of course, this kind of training is very destructive, primarily for vegetative cover and changes to the soil matrix. So our big issues, at least that I am looking at, are vegetative loss and sediment load that results from erosion, and also the need for low economic costs, and also training load, which the Army finds very important. So basically the background, as part of my work for SURL, I was involved in an installation-wide erosion assessment of Camp Atterbury Joint Maneuver Training Center in south central Indiana. It's a National Guard and Air National Guard training facility, and they do a lot of training, especially off-road training there. We basically looked at all of the actively eroding areas. We found them, we confirmed that they were actively eroding through field investigations, and then we ranked them using the degree of erosion, basically erosion per year, estimated with WEP and Russell. We also looked at potential for rehabilitation, primarily how easy it would be to rehabilitate and the cost, the approximate cost associated, and also impacts to military training, such as troop safety issues and impacts to the environment other than erosion, like sediment loading, impacts to threatened and endangered species, et cetera, et cetera. And we use some prioritization Army and Army Corps forms, I guess is what they were. And that's some examples on those pictures. We have rutted and horribly eroded secondary trails that are impassable. We have gully erosion. Here we have a check dam of BMP that was not installed or done properly. So we have the water just started going around it and eroding out from around it. So those are some examples. There is a clipboard to give some size to the area. And you, even up here on this hill, you can still see the little rill erosion that starts way up there and ends down here. The result of this erosion assessment was that we gave Camp Atterbury a snapshot in time, basically, of active erosion on their training lands. And we gave them data about those areas that were most in need of repair and those with the highest potential for success. However, we didn't provide them with any information with regard to the cost of, or the estimated cost of these repairs, and more importantly, we failed to recommend ways to prevent future erosion and future active erosion hotspots, and the cost of implementing those preventative plans. And really, I think that's the key, and that's why I chose to do the framework I'm about to talk about, because I mean, it's one thing to spend all the Army's money and all of our money, basically. Fixing all of these spots that are already a problem, but really wouldn't it be better to try to limit the degradation before it begins? So that's really where I was going with my framework. So that's really the goals for my research were to basically create a framework that military land managers could use to maintain sustainable plans, sustainable training lands. And this basically primarily includes military training scheduling and distribution in sustainable quantities, and also BMP placement, both the timing of the BMP's application and also the spatial quantity or qualities. And also to do this, of course, within environmental and economic considerations. Environmental considerations for what I focused on were sediment loading and then also economic considerations, which are basically the average yearly budget. So the framework is basically a SWOT genetic algorithm integration. Briefly, the way it works, here we're concerned with training load, which impacts basically your USLE cover factor, your C factor. The more training you have, the higher the C factor. The more vegetation that is destroyed or uprooted, and the more bare ground you have. So the higher C factor you have. Also, the more BMPs you have, typically that's associated with your practice factor and USLE, and so the lower the practice factor goes. These are SWOT inputs for our watershed model, and they impact, of course, by changing these SWOT inputs, SWOT runs, and you get new outputs. SWOT outputs your average yearly sediment load for your study area, and you can also put some economic cost data in there. The way this works is genetic algorithm analyzes these outputs, in this case sediment load and economic costs, and it analyzes this and then produces guesses, basically. It guesses better sediment load schedules and better BMP placements to produce in return better SWOT outputs, so lower sediment load and lower economic costs. So the genetic algorithm is basically guessing training loads and BMPs to produce lower sediment loads and lower economic costs. This cycle repeats over and over depending on how complicated your model is and your study area, and eventually it'll give you an optimum or nearly optimum training schedule and BMP schedule after anywhere from 10 minutes to 2 days. The SWOT model is a USDA model. It's used a lot by the EPA for their maximum total daily load and impaired water body research. And it's the reason that I chose to use it is it's user-friendly, it's free, which is important, and it's highly regarded. It's integrated with GIS, and as I said earlier, it's important for the USLE parameters to be used, and they are both within USLE and also within MUSLE, so the modified version, which calculates sediment load. Genetic algorithm, basically it's a sophisticated guess and check algorithm. It analyzes the outputs and guesses better inputs. It does this in the user defines how it analyzes the outputs to produce better inputs for SWOT. Like I said, it runs however many times you tell it to, and there's a ton of different genetic algorithms out there. Some are better than others, but they're all pretty much the same. So the question is, how does the genetic algorithm analyze the SWOT outputs to produce better SWOT inputs? Basically, it's done by, in this model, we tell it to minimize sediment load, minimize total cost, and maximize training load. Unfortunately, the reason we need the genetic algorithm is because all three of these are interrelated. As training load goes up, for example, sediment load goes up. So, of course, we want to maximize training load, but at the same time, we want to minimize sediment load. We also have sediment load is a function of cost. As cost goes up, we're implementing more BMPs, and sediment load goes down. It's a good thing that the sediment load goes down, but we also want to keep cost low. So how do we minimize both? We also have cost as a function of training. You have costs associated with non-erosion related repairs, such as road repairs, trail repairs, etc. And the more training load you have, the more cost you have. And again, we do want to maximize training load, but we want to minimize cost. We don't want that to increase. So how do we juggle all three of these and also have a sustainable land management program? Here's some very basic outputs. And basically what we see here, for one study area in Camp Atterbury, we have a bunch of combinations. We can have this sediment load, or excuse me, we can have this training load, which will cost this much and produce this much sediment. And we can see here that really, The lowest we can really go for our study areas in this particular case is about 1,400 metric tons of sediment for a fairly wide range of training loads at a fairly low cost. If we want to lower our sediment load even further, of course, our cost jumps and it's pretty much unacceptable. So how do we, for this lower cost area and for this lower sediment load area, what are our training load options? So we can see here that we can have a small training load, but we can also have fairly large training loads and still have roughly the same total cost, roughly the same average annual sediment load from the same area, but we can do it over a range of training loads. More importantly, we also have the specific data about the spatial distribution of our training loads. Here we have training loads, and for this black, the next data is for this black, which was the data point, which was really sediment load of about 1,500, training of around 12,000 MIMS, and cost of, I believe, about $70,000. And it was really the most optimum plan that I found. And for that plan, we have this training load distribution. So we have high training loads down in a relatively low slope areas here and here. And we also have fairly minimal BMP or P factor applications, which of course, you're talking about riprap, hydro seeding, they can be very expensive. So the more we minimize that, the better. And so here we're putting training in areas that are naturally sustainable, little erosion comes from them, whether we have large training loads or small training loads, and so they don't really need too much in the way of BMPs. We also have the resulting sediment load from each subarea, and we do have some hot spots, but overall it's fairly minimal, and it's lower than it would otherwise be without some of these optimization tools. And some of these hot spots, whether you have training there or not, you're going to have a lot of sediment. So really we're trying to realize that yes, we're going to have some areas that are degrading no matter what we do, but we can also put training in areas where it's more sustainable. Some of the future work that's possible, all of my work was on average annual relationships. So average annual relationships of training load to vegetative cover and vegetative cover to sediment, to the corresponding sediment load. And these were all average annual. But of course, if you go out there and you train, you have a big training event right after it rains, or if you have a big training event in the spring when all your vegetation is developing, that's going to have a greater impact on your sediment load and probably on your associated costs than it would otherwise. So really, the average annual relationships are not as good as they could be. We should be using monthly relationships or weekly relationships, but that's also much more complicated. And we really don't have the field data to come up with those relationships. And so that's really the big thing, is trying to these relationships between vegetative cover, sediment load, training load, and cost, getting those more refined. And so that we can not only pick where to train, but also when, whether it be the spring, whether it be June, whether it be August, whenever. And then also, I used a relatively simple genetic algorithm in a single objective version, but in order to highlight some of these more time-dependent relationships, we would need a much more robust genetic algorithm. So, any questions?